And welcome back into Game Day, SportsRadio.com on Friday, September 21st, 2018. Boji Wood with you this morning. We're in the Game Day, SportsRadio.com studio south of Atlanta, Georgia. It is time for Inside the Numbers for Friday, September the 21st. Inside the Numbers, sponsored by State Farm Insurance and your local agent. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. Let's go ahead and bring in Mike Bernard from OTM Sports. Mike, we're going to take a look at a lot of college games that are going to be taking place. One tonight, and a bunch of them tomorrow, and then even look at some NFL games. Obviously, we're looking at these games a few days early, but as far as the NFL goes, but hey, we've got to get you when we can get you, and we just appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Oh, always glad to be on. I've got all my notes and numbers ready, and let's go ahead and get going.
Well, tonight we've got a trio of games, a couple that involved ranked teams. A number 10 Penn State visits Illinois, and that's a Big Ten matchup. And then Florida Atlantic University, Lane Kiffin and the Owls, they travel up to Orlando to take on the number 16 Central Florida Knights, defending national champions. And so we will we're going to skip those games. The game that we want to talk about taking place tonight is a 10:30 p.m. ESPN kick. It's a couple of unranked teams that are going to meet tonight in the Coliseum in Los Angeles. 3-0 Washington State and 1-2 USC. These are two teams, Mike. They look like they're headed in the opposite directions right now.
They do. Clay Helton, is this his last year as head coach in L.A.? I mean, I brought it up on the recap show earlier this week. They had 16 run attempts, netted 5 yards when they played in Austin. They lost the last two games by a combined score of 54-17.
This is a perfect storm for the Cougars and Mike Leach. Washington State averaging 44 points per game. Again, Wyoming, San Jose State, Eastern Washington, you know, not defenses the caliber that they should face when they play a Trojan team. However, this is not – doesn't seem to be the typical Trojan team. There were a lot of high hopes for them this year. I agree with you. Clay Helton needs to win. He needs to win now. And nobody cares that he's playing with basically a high school senior at quarterback. You know, that's their own decision. You know, that's what they're going with. So, you know, he can't blame anyone for that. This staff, there's a lot of pressure on this staff right now. And if you go back and kind of look at a trend, since that big Rose Bowl win, things have kind of slid downhill for the Trojans.
They have. And look, I have a very good friend whose son played at USC for 5 years. He was actually under Kiffin, Orgeron, and Helton twice, I guess. Mm-hmm. And Helton is a very good coach. I heard nothing but good things. And he's won in the past. I just think right now the standard, he's being held to a high standard, and he's not there. And one thing that I'll point to is in Vegas, USC is getting trounced. Their last 19 games, they've covered three. That's a woeful 14% against the spread. Head-to-head, when these teams meet, the road team has covered five of the last six meetings, and surprisingly, the last four meetings that were played in L.A. were all low-scoring and all stayed under.
Yeah, I never thought I would say this sentence, but USC, Washington State in the Coliseum – you know, I like Washington State. I never thought that I would say that, but I do. I like Mike Leach and the Cougars to get a big win tonight in the Coliseum. Now, tomorrow in the SEC, we're going to kick things off at noon on ESPN with number 2 Georgia traveling to Missouri. This is an SEC East battle. Georgia coming off a Middle Tennessee State breather with no problems. Last week, Missouri went on the road. Hard-fought win, came from behind late up at Purdue.
Right. This game, Georgia opened as a 10.5-point favorite. They're now favored by 2 touchdowns. The total's around 64. So the total's real high. The Bulldogs look like they've reloaded after losing six defensive starters from 2017. The Dogs get putting up 45 points a game, allowing only 8 points a game. You talked about that hard-fought win against Purdue for Missouri. That was a road win against a Big Ten team, and they're off to a 3-0 start. So they got that Big Ten win and then two wins over an undervalued Mountain West Conference. Quarterback Drew Locke picked up where he's left off last year, 11 touchdowns, only one interception.
He's completed right at 70% of his passes thus far for 1,062 yards. There's not a throw that this guy can't make. He's 6'4", 225, prototype NFL quarterback. I think he'll have a big career in the league going forward. For Georgia, Jake Fromm, sophomore, great leader in 2017, came on after the injury to Jacob Eason. He's 37 of 46 on the year with 479 yards, but not against real good competition, obviously. But Georgia has a strong running game. Evan Holyfield is just is doing a great job for them there. You can't say enough about Devontae Swift. They've got talent in that backfield, including a freshman backup quarterback, Justin Fields, who's seen plenty of playing time. Now, in my mind, UGA really hasn't been tested, and Missouri has been in a tough game. Purdue is 0-3, but as you said, don't write off that win up in West Lafayette. The Boilermakers, they aren't that bad at all. And I can see the Tigers giving the Bulldogs some trouble if the crowd gets into the game. Let's go back to Georgia's toughest test. And they took that South Carolina crowd out of the game early, and it never was really a factor. These two teams, when they met last year in Athens, Bulldogs got the best of the Tigers, 53-28. But you go back to 2016, and it was 28-27. Georgia had to score late to win, and the Tigers finished a dismal 4-8 that year.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Missouri's first 2 years in the league, I believe I'm correct, I think they won the East the first 2 years that they were in the league representing the East. Is that correct?
Played Auburn and then played Alabama in the championship game.
Right. So they didn't come in, and of course there was a different head coach and a different coaching staff, but right now they look like they have the mojo. They're going against a really tough team, but as you said, they are at home. So let's take a look at inside the numbers. Georgia, 19-7, their last 26 road games against the spread. So they're not only are they winning games outright, they're also covering. Missouri, they're a very good spread team as of late. They've covered 9 of their last 12. And I think the Tigers' defensive front looks to be much improved. Of course, they needed a lot of improvement from last year. Through 3 games, the Tigers only allowing 75 rush yards per game. They need that type of performance to stay in the game on Saturday.
That Tiger defense, they are playing better. No doubt about that. Barry Odom, of course, is a defensive guy. I think his smartest hire in the offseason was bringing Derek Dooley in as offensive coordinator from the Dallas Cowboys, where Dooley was a receivers coach. Of course, we're talking about Derek Dooley, son of famed Georgia coach Vince Dooley and former coach at Louisiana, head coach at Louisiana Tech and at Tennessee. And many say that the Auburn-Arkansas could be the SEC upset special. I don't believe that. I think Auburn's going to
win. No way.
Yeah, I think Auburn's going to win easily, but you know how people talk. But listen, I think if there is an upset in the Southeastern Conference this week, this is my pick. I don't think it's going to happen, but if you said pick one game where there could be an upset, I think this could be it.
Well, the line opened 10.5. It's only 14, and it's played in Missouri. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's certainly a much greater chance of Missouri beating Georgia than Arkansas playing with Auburn, much less beating them.
I am in total agreement with you there. There's no and the friends of mine, I hesitate to even call them friends anymore because I don't want to hang around people that are that delusional. But then, of course, now we'll have to be sitting here on Monday eating crow talking about how Auburn was upset by the mighty Arkansas Razorbacks. That's not going to happen. All right, no. Now, and again, if you're looking for another upset, Atlanta's not the place to look this weekend. When number 3 Clemson goes in and plays Georgia Tech, that's a 3:30 kick on ABC. But you never know what you're going to get when these two teams play. Georgia Tech has a way of frustrating good defenses with that option attack because unless you're going to play Navy and Air Force every year, the only time you're going to see the option like this is when you play Georgia Tech.
That's right. And to be honest with you, first of all, let's look at the line. Clemson opened 14.5. They immediately shot up to 16.5 or 17. So the Vegas odds makers adjusted that line. And one thing that I'll look at when you play an option team, the real effect is the week after. Because I don't think Georgia Tech can beat Clemson in this game. But I do think that they can create problems for Clemson following this game because Clemson has one of the top 3 defensive lines in all of college football. They're only allowing 2.1 yards per rush through 3 games. And Tech, they're off to a terrible start. Their defense is getting thrashed. They've gave up 73 points the last 2 games. And Paul Johnson is really catching the heat.
Paul Johnson is catching heat. And you mentioned next week, we'll go ahead and just throw this one out there. Clemson host Syracuse next week there in Death Valley. But staying on this game, Brent Venables, he's watching a lot of Pitt tape this week because Pat Narduzzi and the Panthers, they did a great job of shutting down that jacket option last week. It was 24-19, but now let's go ahead and say Tech scored with 37 seconds left to make it close. The game was not a 24-19 game. But again, that's one of the benefits of running the option. Most of the time, you don't get blown out so bad because of the ball control that you have. And so you can play a far superior team, and you can still keep the score respectable. But last year, Tech was not respectable. 5-6, and had they played the Hurricane game with Central Florida, they would have been 5-7 last year. I think they're going to struggle to win 5 this year. An off-season move that has me looking at Tech going, huh, was Ted Roof. Ted Roof is a Georgia Tech graduate, loves Georgia Tech, was there under Johnson as defensive coordinator from 2013 through last year. For some reason, Ted made a lateral move to North Carolina State. I have no idea why. He had no connections there with the coaching staff or anything. But he made that lateral move. That's got me wondering about the internal workings and morale there at Georgia Tech right now. And I will say this. If the Jackets don't go bowling this year, I won't be surprised if Paul Johnson is gone.
I will not either, and I don't have any information to back this up. But when Johnson's gone at the end of this year, if he is, they might bring Ted Roof back in to be head coach because he's got head coaching experience, and he's obviously a proven head coach. And you talked about that Pitt game and how it wasn't as close. Remember, Pitt was up 21-0. So Tech was out of that game from the first quarter. And Johnson's catching a lot of heat. As far as this game, let's take a look at the numbers. The last 7 meetings in Atlanta were low scoring. Only one of those contests went over the total. Clemson was outgained in College Station, and A&M had 11 more first downs. That's concerning for Clemson fans. But they were +2 in the turnover margin in that game, and I think it was likely the difference in the win.
Okay, Mike, I'm going to ask you a quick question. I want your honest answer. Tell me the best thing about this game. Do you know what the best thing about this game is? No, you don't. I'm going to tell you. You can walk over to the varsity and get some chili dogs. That's the best thing about this game. Because, listen, Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence, those two great quarterbacks at Clemson, they're both going to get plenty of playing time. The Tigers will prowl in the shadows of downtown Atlanta. I like Clemson big in this one. Let's move on to the marquee SEC game of the day, and that's the 3:30 CBS kick between number 25, Texas A&M, and number 1, Alabama. You know, even though they're now in the same conference, and you always kind of equated these two teams together, because even going back to Coach Bryant, Coach Stallings, it's hard to believe they've only met 10 times. Alabama holds an 8-2 advantage. The only Texas A&M wins was the 1968 Cotton Bowl, when Coach Stallings was a young coach at Texas A&M and Coach Bryant was at Alabama. And then, of course, the 2012 game in Tuscaloosa when Johnny Football went crazy down there. Now, this Aggie defense is better than they were last year, but much like we talked about Missouri earlier, they have to be. But a lot of this has got to be credited to the culture change, because this defense, they played with unyielding effort versus Clemson, who has a ton of talent over there. Now, the bad thing for Texas A&M, they're not playing in College Station. They're going into Tuscaloosa to place a Bama team that has better offensive numbers than Clemson right now. And when you look at what Tua Tagovailoa has done, listen, he has yet to disappoint.
Yeah, that offense has put up unprecedented numbers through three games. They're averaging 545 yards per game. And listen, the starters haven't played that many snaps in the third and fourth quarters. Heading into the season for Texas A&M, the question was, could Jimbo Fisher change the culture and the mindset of this team in a short time? The numbers show that he has done that. A&M allowed 200 or more rushing yards in 8 different games in 2017. This year, Coach, they're only allowing 80 rush yards per game.
You and I, several times over the season, we've referenced culture change there under Jimbo Fisher. And let's be honest, it's not just on defense, it's throughout the entire program, because he has the offense playing more efficiently anytime since the days of Johnny Football.
Yes, quarterback Kellen Mond, he hasn't thrown a pick thus far. We're only through a few games, but that's a real key in this game. The Aggies can't afford to give Alabama's offense extra possessions. That goes without saying. Vegas, they can't set the line high enough in Alabama games. Alabama's winning games by, you know, big margins. I've been on the sideline waiting to see if and when somebody slows Alabama down. I'm still in the wait-and-see mode. But, Coach, I'm going to lean to A&M here because they're getting close to 4 touchdowns. And I think they may be able to keep it close, but as far as any type of big play, I'm going to sit on the sideline with Alabama until I see it and believe it.
Jimbo Fisher and I are not good friends or great friends or anything like that. But let me say this about Jimbo Fisher. I coached against him his senior year in college. I coached against him the next year, his first year of coaching, when he was the quarterback coach at Samford. And then he and I were on the staff together at Samford for a short period of time. So I say this with firsthand knowledge, not only just watching what he did at Florida State, but with just knowing the type of fire that burns inside of him. He's got the Aggies headed in the right direction, and they will get there. Now, they're not there yet, and unless this Bama offense forgets who they are, the tide will roll tomorrow down in Bryant-Denny Stadium. I think the biggest part about this game to watch is that it's the fourth game of the season. Now, again, not trying to stir the pot, you Bama fans, but Jalen Hurts, he can play in this game. And then if he plays one more snap after the Texas A&M game, then he has burned a year of eligibility. He graduates in December. He could go and be a graduate transfer somewhere else, have 2 years left. I think that's going to be the biggest drama in this football game.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of talk about that all, you know, the first few weeks of the season. My gut feeling is he's going to play more than 4 games this year.
Well, everything that I hear coming out of Tuscaloosa is that he is there for the long haul. And I'm going to commend the young man because he's taken a lot of criticism, undue and unjust criticism, from the general public and some Alabama fans. Listen, I think this is an outstanding young man with a lot of character. And no matter what he chooses to do, I know that he'll handle it in a class way.
Well, he handled the championship game in a very classful way. He's a flatliner. I refer to that all the time. He never gets too high, never gets too low. And why wouldn't he stay at Alabama and showcase his talents? We've seen backup quarterbacks go on. We've seen quarterbacks go to the NFL that never had a college start. Matt Cassel for the Patriots, mm-hmm, never had a college start at USC and started in the NFL. Keely Smith had very few starts at Oregon. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was a bust, but mm-hmm, still, he has a chance to play at the next level, albeit I think it's at a different position.
I was going to throw that in, Mike. I think the difference between Jalen Hurts and the two guys that you mentioned is that he has a different skill set than those guys. And he may be a Cordell Stewart type player that can play a number of other positions, but you have a safety net there at quarterback, and that's a rare commodity in the NFL.
Yeah, you don't have to have a third quarterback on the sideline. You don't have to have him take a roster spot. You have it built in with Jalen Hurts if he's playing an H-back or a special teams type player.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and we'll review some more college games right here on Inside the Numbers, sponsored by State Farm Insurance and your local agents. State Farm Insurance here to help life go right. And we're going to take a quick break for some commercial messages, and we'll be right back with more Inside the Numbers on GameDaySportsRadio.com. Inside the Numbers is brought to you by State Farm Insurance. Call or visit your local State Farm agent to find out how State Farm can help you with auto, home, life, property, or one of their many other products. In the Birmingham, Alabama market, contact Larry McIntosh at 205-663-3119. Located at 2685 Pelham Parkway, Larry and his staff are ready to serve you and your family. Contact Larry today at 205-663-3119 and get State Farm on your team. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right.
Everything you need for football season is now in one place. The National Sports Phone is updated daily with free picks from the nation's top handicappers, plus updated Las Vegas odds and free trend reports. It's all in a toll-free recorded message. That's 1-888-800-5000. Free picks, free trends, and odds all on tape at 1-888-800-5000. It's the National Sports Phone. That's 888-800-5000. That's 888-800-5000.
For 30-plus years, Premier Skyline has been a leader in the high-rise window cleaning industry. Professional window cleaning and restoration for high-rise office buildings, including hospitals, casinos, and major universities. Check them out at PremierSkyline.com. That's PremierSkyline.com for all of your high-rise window cleaning needs.
And welcome back into Inside the Numbers, sponsored by State Farm Insurance and your local State Farm agents. State Farm Insurance here to help life go right. Mike Bernard of OTM Sports out in Las Vegas still with us for this edition of Inside the Numbers. Forgot to mention that Mike's actually coming to us from the GameDaySportsRadio.com studios out in Las Vegas. Mike, let's move on to a 7 p.m. kick on ESPN. It is Florida-Tennessee. This game, much like last week's USC-Texas game, for many years this is the game that decided the SEC East. Both teams, they were stacked with talent year in and year out. There's been a big drop-off, though. And you can forget the fact that Florida won the East in 15 and 16. They weren't very good. And right now there's average talent in both Knoxville and Gainesville.
Yeah, it's quite many different dynamics in this matchup than it was, say, in the 90s and in the 2000s. You're right. And the 15 team and the 16 team, they went to the SEC title game, but they got blown out by double digits. When I took a look at Florida Coach, they had 19 starters returning. They had a much more favorable schedule than Georgia does. And those two factors made me look at Florida having a slim chance to win the East. But when they lost at home to Kentucky in their first SEC game, I think that throws that out the window. Volunteers, they played one quality opponent thus far, and that was to West Virginia. They lost by 26. Their first conference game is this game. We still don't know if Florida is a quality team, but Florida has beaten Tennessee 12 of the last 13 in the series.
Yeah, since they've played every year since 1990, I believe, you know, Florida's like, you know, 20-7. All that being said, though, I don't think the Gators are a good team this year. But they don't have to be a good team to beat Tennessee right now. And Tennessee let this one get away last year on the Hail Mary by Felipe Franks. It seems like that Tennessee lately has found a way to lose this game. And actually I was wrong. I just got corrected. It's not 20-7 Florida since 1990. It's 21-7 Florida since 1990.
Right, and again, the last 13 – Tennessee's only won once, and that's just, you know, it really doesn't, it makes you think, because you don't think of this game, this rivalry being so lopsided. One concern for Gators fans, Coach, Florida allowed 300-plus rushing yards to Kentucky, and they gave up 222 rushing yards to Charleston Southern. Against the number, Tennessee, not very good at all. They've only covered two of their last 10 home games. Florida, not any better. They failed to cover five straight conference games. The line in this game opened Florida -8 on the road. It's been bet down to 4.5, and I still don't want to touch it because, frankly, I don't have faith in either team.
A big win for Jeremy Pruitt this week if he can beat Florida just from an appearance standpoint. Again, I don't think Florida's a very good team. But, again, Tennessee, in his first year beating Florida, that would soothe a lot of wounds that are going to come down the road with this Tennessee team later on. But still, I like Florida in this game. I think that the Gators are going to go up to Neyland Stadium and get the win. I think we're going to learn a lot about the mental makeup of LSU this week. Louisiana Tech. They visit the number 6 Tigers. That's going to be 7 p.m. kick on ESPNU. Joe Burrow, the quarterback transfer from Ohio State, think he's a stabilizing force on this team. The leadership that he's shown, his teammates, they respect him. They look up to him. They will follow him. It's going to be a hard week because they need leadership, because this is going to be an easy week to have a letdown after a hard-fought victory in Auburn.
It is, and when we talked about this game briefly on the Monday morning blitz, I talked about LSU coming off that big win on the Plains. The quarterback was key in the win, and Louisiana Tech, they come in from little old Conference USA. They have a 2-0 record, but they don't have respect. The Bulldogs haven't played a quality team, but they're in a very favorable spot here. They're, the in-state little brother that feels slighted plays a Power 5 team coming off an emotional win. So the Tigers of LSU are in a classic letdown spot.
No doubt about that. And LSU overlooked non-Power 5 Sunbelt foe Troy last year, and Troy escaped with a win. I don't think it's going to happen again. I think that LSU learned their lesson from that last year. That being said, LSU's bucket has got to be close to empty as far as emotional support goes, and Louisiana Tech's is going to be overflowing with emotion. I think that LSU will win, but this one may be closer than a lot of people think.
Right, and that's what I'm looking at. LSU's a 21-point favorite, somewhere around 3 touchdowns. We'll see where it moves to. But Louisiana Tech, they're used to being underdog versus when they get to play SEC schools. The last 9 times they've played SEC teams, they've covered 7. So they're not intimidated. They're usually undervalued in these games. Tech's going to be the more motivated team. And LSU, after that physical game with Auburn, they're going to likely to be banged up. And again, it's the little brother syndrome. I'm going to take the points and look for a Louisiana Tech to keep it closer than 3 touchdowns.
I'm in agreement with you there. I think that I think Tech will play it close, but I think LSU, of course, wins in the end. In the first segment of the show, I mentioned to you that there were – I've had several people tell me that they thought that Arkansas had a great chance to upset Auburn simply because Auburn was coming off of that tough loss. Listen, I know both teams are licking wounds, and Jared Stidham, he needs to rebound from what I would consider his worst game as a Tiger. And, you know, but it's one thing to lose by one to LSU and another to get blown out at home by North Texas, 44-10, I believe. Now, Auburn may have lost a tough game, but Arkansas is reeling. You know, I'll just say it up front. I don't think the Razorbacks have a chance in this game.
All right, Coach, for those that are saying that Auburn is going to get upset. Okay, they opened as a 27-point favorite, and now they're favored by around 30. So the people that step on over to my world and go ahead and play Arkansas on the money line. you'll get a lot of odds, but you'll lose, okay, because Auburn's not going to get beat in this spot. I don't know if they're going to cover the 30. That's a huge line, but they're not going to lose the game. You know, classic case, in my opinion, of existing players not fitting the scheme of a new head coach. Arkansas is coming off back-to-back blowout losses to Mountain West and Conference USA teams. They were blowouts. Auburn is off a tough loss to LSU, but I think Arkansas is what Auburn needs to rebound.
Yeah, and Chad Morris at Arkansas, he better figure out a way to be competitive now. Because he's got a revolving door at quarterback, and he doesn't have the same problem that they have at Alabama and Clemson, where they've got two really, really good quarterbacks. He ain't got one good quarterback. And if he doesn't get this fixed soon and be competitive, he won't last long enough to get all his recruits into their junior or senior year, because Hog fans, they're going to be less patient with Morris than they were with Brett Bielema.
Yeah, well, I hope Morris learned from Bielema not to run his mouth, because every time Bielema run his mouth about the Big 12, he got beat. But I don't think Chad Morris is the answer in Fayetteville. As for numbers in the game, Auburn's covered four of the last five meetings. They're laying a huge number in this one. The last four in the series all went over, so they were high scoring. I don't know if I'd lay the 30 here, but I like Auburn to win handily.
I like the Tigers to win big, too, but I can tell you it has not been a happy week on the Plains, especially for Gus Malzahn and the way that Auburn lost on Saturday. You don't pay a coach $7 million a year to lose those type games. You pay a coach $7 million a year to win those type games.
Absolutely. And, you know, he does some unorthodox things, but the bottom line is he's known for his offense, but that defensive front, you got to give him credit. I know he's not the defensive coach, and Kevin still is, but at least he recruited those players in that Auburn defensive front. Even in the loss, they played solid again.
They did. Let's move on to our last college game of the week. This will take place a late kick. We're actually not usually. Usually we're looking at these kicks at 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern time. But since this is the ABC game, the 8 p.m. game, the whole nation will get a chance to look at two of the top teams from the Pac-12, number 7 Stanford and number 20 Oregon. The Cardinal, they'll go into Eugene. Both of these teams 3-0 right now. Mario Cristobal, former Alabama assistant. Man, he did a great job down at FIU, and I'm telling you, he seems to have found a home out there in Oregon. David Shaw, of course, you know, he's become a Stanford institution.
Yeah, David Shaw, one of my favorite coaches in all of college football. As for the start time in this game, the Pac-12, they need to do whatever they can do. They need to listen to Chris Peterson and follow his lead and get their games in prime time earlier in the day, because frankly, when games go at 10:30 Eastern or 10:45 Eastern, the East Coast and Central time zone, a lot of those time zones have checked out.
That's exactly right. He's got to, you know, Chris Peterson, and again, had he started out at a Power 5 school, if that was his first head coaching job, I don't think he would have the same philosophy. But because he had to do it at Boise State and saw the success that it brought them, and because they were successful, you know, going all the way back to the game where they came to the old Georgia Dome and opened the season against Georgia. No one gave them a credit. No one gave them a chance to win that game, and they waxed the Georgia Dome with the Bulldogs.
Yeah, and so the point is, Pac-12, if you want to get, if you want to be more relevant, if you want to be not slighted, you got to get in these time zones. So they've done it here, got number 7 Stanford, number 20 Oregon. Both teams come in undefeated. They're really the two hopes, along with Washington, have any chance to get in the playoffs. The Cardinal, coming off a disappointing 2017 campaign, that included 5 losses. But, Coach, when you look at those 5 losses, 4 of those were by 3 points or less, so they were competitive in all games. They look like, to me, they're back to physical play at the point of attack on the line of scrimmage. The Ducks have not been tested, but they are 3-0. They started 3-0 in 2017, but then they went on to lose 6 of their next 10 games. This is a key game for both teams, obviously. One thing I look at is San Jose State shut down the Oregon run game last week. That's concerning with Stanford coming to town.
Well, and Cristobal, being an old offensive lineman down at the University of Miami and an O-line coach, you know, he's not happy about that, because physicality, that's always been his trademark. You know, as a matter of fact, both coaches, they know that they have to throw the ball in this day and age, but listen, if they outlawed the forward pass tomorrow, neither of these two coaches would complain about it.
Right. They both established the run, which you and I both love. I'm a handicapper. You're a former coach and player. And look, that's the way you win games. You establish the run and you stop the run. But, you know, it's been a little more difficult to go with strictly that philosophy with the supersonic speed and tempo these days. When I take a look at numbers in the game, the Ducks are known to go at a frenetic pace. They lead 10 of the 13 in this series. Excuse me, 10 of the last 13 meetings in this series have gone over the total, even though Stanford normally plays low-scoring games. When they get into these matches, it turns into a track meet when they play Oregon. Stanford, they have won 2 of the last 3 trips to Oregon. And the Ducks, not a very good spread team. In fact, they're pretty poor. The Ducks have covered just 9 of their last 30 games.
I think this game may be closer than a lot of people realize. I think a lot of people think Stanford is going to just blow Oregon out. I think in the end, I think Stanford wins the game. I think this is going to show Mario Cristobal and Oregon where they stack up from a physical standpoint. And trust me, Mario Cristobal wants to get back to being a physical football program at Oregon. This will be a good test, but I think Stanford wins in the end. It's time for another break. We're going to come back with more Inside the Numbers when we take a look at some pro football for Sunday, and we'll do that when we come back. I want to remind you, you're listening to Inside the Numbers, sponsored by State Farm Insurance and all your local State Farm agents. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. Won't you hear what I say? Inside the Numbers is brought to you by State Farm Insurance. Call or visit your local State Farm agent to find out how State Farm can help you with auto, home, life, property, or one of their many other products. In the Birmingham, Alabama market, contact Larry McIntosh at 205-663-3119. Located at 2685 Pelham Parkway, Larry and his staff are ready to serve you and your family. Contact Larry today at 205-663-3119 and get State Farm on your team. State Farm Insurance. Here to help life go right.
Everything you need for football season is now in one place. The National Sports Phone is updated daily with free picks from the nation's top handicappers, plus updated Las Vegas odds and free trend reports. It's all on a toll-free recorded message. That's 1-888-800-5000. Free picks, free trends, and odds all on tape at 1-888-800-5000. It's the National Sports Phone. That's 888-800-5000. That's 888-800-5000.
For 30-plus years, Premier Skyline has been a leader in the high-rise window cleaning industry. professional window cleaning and restoration for high-rise office buildings, including hospitals, casinos, and major universities. Check them out at PremierSkyline.com. That's PremierSkyline.com for all of your high-rise window cleaning needs.
And welcome back into Inside the Numbers for Friday, September 21st. Inside the Numbers, sponsored by State Farm Insurance and your local State Farm agents. State Farm Insurance here to help life go right. Of course, Mike Bernard of OTM Sports out in the GameDaySportsRadio.com studios in Las Vegas. Still with us as we look ahead a couple of days to some Sunday games. Mike, let's start off with the Saints and the Falcons. That's going to be a 1 p.m. kick, and this is an NFC South matchup. Now, before the Carolina Panthers came into the league, this was Atlanta's fiercest rivalry, and they still go at each other pretty good, and they usually play well against each other, and it's usually an entertaining game.
It is, and Coach, the point spread is talking to us in this one. Atlanta was favored by 5 or 6 points over a very good Carolina team at home last week. This week, they're playing the Saints, and they're only favored by 3. Something's amiss here. We're still looking into the line disparity from week 2 to 3 in this game, but we're definitely listening to the point spread talk to us in this one.
Maybe one thing that the point spread had to take into consideration this week that it didn't last week, Devontae Freeman, who a lot of people thought may play last week, is definitely out now, could be out for some time. You know, that's a concern for the Falcons, but all of a sudden, Tevin Coleman, a fourth-year kid out of Indiana, man, he picked up the slack big time against the Panthers last week.
Right. Atlanta ran it 18 times for only 74 yards in week 1 against Philly. They ran it 32 times for 170 yards against Carolina. That was the difference in the game. Even as we talked about on the blitz, Matt Ryan had 2 rushing touchdowns. So they were more physical last in week 2 than they were in week 1. I look for them to try and establish the run game in this one. As for the series, the underdog has covered 7 of the last 9 meetings. Maybe that's a factor in the line being a little low. The Saints are a solid road team against the number. They're 14-5 against the number the last 19 times they've gone on the road.
I like the Falcons fans to turn Mercedes-Benz Stadium into a legitimate home field advantage, and I like the Falcons to go get the win here and go 2-1 on the season. Maybe a field goal late that wins it, but I look for the Falcons to slip out of here with a win. Also, Sunday afternoon, a 4:25 game on the East Coast. Of course, a 1:25 kick out on the West Coast. It's the Chargers and the Rams. Sean McVay, man, you're talking about a special type coach. The guy's got a photographic memory. Now, Mike, back when I was coaching, you know, I could tell you about certain plays, certain instances that happen, and there are a couple of big games or big moments in certain games that even now that I can go back and tell you, oh, yeah, it was 3rd and 4, and we had this personnel in and this, that, and the other. Listen, this cat can go back in just about any situation, any game, and he can tell you what he called. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's amazing, and kind of reminds me of LeBron recalling the seven possession series in the finals when he was asked a rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. You know, that's amazing to be, and that was right after the game. But what might be more impressive to me is, Coach, this, it's not too long ago that the Rams were the doormat of the league. They were the doormat, and last week, they were laying double digits, and they covered and won with ease. This game, they're a 7-point favorite over a good Chargers team. The total's 48. Listen, the Chargers are averaging 30 a game, but they give up 29 a game. The Rams, they're scoring 34 a game, but they only give up 7 points a game. The Rams haven't been tested by a great team, but their defense will have their biggest challenge so far because they have to go up against Phillip Rivers.
Phillip Rivers, even in what you've got to consider the twilight of his career, he is still productive. He still gets it done. you know, he's an Alabama guy, played his college ball at North Carolina State. Of course, he was not good enough to be recruited by Alabama nor Auburn as a quarterback. But that's another story altogether. But, you know, I like this young man. He goes out, he lays it on the line week after week after week. Yeah, I hate this guy has never won a championship. And it looks like he's going to end his career sometime in the next few years. And you know, unless by chance he gets traded from the Chargers, which he doesn't want. He wants to retire a Charger, but he's not going to because, you know, the Chargers, their biggest problem, as you said earlier, defense.
Yeah, when you give up 29 a game, you're not in the conversation of a championship. When I look inside the numbers of this game, they've been Chargers. In fact, have been a reliable road team against the point spread. Their last 23 road trips, 15-7-1 against the spread. The Rams made it to the postseason in 2017, but they've been a poor spread team. Now, remember, they're not getting points in these games. They're laying big numbers. The Rams have covered just 5 of their last 17 home games.
Rob, well, you know me. I'm not worried about covering anything. I just want to win by one. I like the Rams. And I'm going to say this, Mike. We can go ahead and record this for prosperity. I look for the Los Angeles Rams to be a Super Bowl team within the next 3 seasons.
Well, Vegas thinks they'll be a Super Bowl team this year because they're actually the favorite to make it to the Super Bowl, the both NFC and AFC.
Wow. Okay. Let's talk about Sunday night's game, the Pats and the Lions. This is master versus pupil. Of course, Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia. Now, Mike, you would think that being the master coach that Belichick is, and there's a lot of people think that he is the greatest NFL coach of all time, and it'd be hard to you'd have to be a pretty good scholar to make an argument against that, noting his success. However, when you look at the number of former assistant coaches he's gone against, I would have thought that he would own a distinct advantage over them. But he's only 11-8 against his former assistants.
Well, I did not know that. And as far as I would not argue against Belichick being the best coach of all time, I would also not argue that he has the worst personality of all time for a head coach. But I didn't know that about the record against the assistant coaches, because in college football, and I know it's two different animals, Nick Saban, for instance, has a great record against his former assistants, and that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm. I think that when we look at this game, the Pats, they go to Jacksonville last week, and as we talked, that was an unusual atmosphere for an NFL game to last for 60 minutes, the emotional pitch that the crowd had, the emotion that the players played with, it was more like a college setting. And I think the Pats, though, one thing that we've always learned about Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots is they keep an even keel. After a loss, they're never going to be too high, never going to be too low. They're just going to take care of business, and I think that's going to help them this week.
It will, and, you know, they are obviously coming off that road loss. They were outgained by almost 180 yards. They lost by 11, despite being plus one in the turnover category. Their opponent, Sunday night, Detroit, they're 0-2. They're giving up 39 points per game. I don't have much positive to say about the Lions from what I've seen so far. They did get a backdoor cover in San Francisco last Sunday, but they were getting run off the field in that game until late. They can't run the ball. They can't stop the run. And, Coach, we both know that's a terrible combination for any level of competitive football.
Even the 85-pound Tiger Cats, that's not a good combination, no doubt about it. The crazy thing about this is that the Lions, they've had the centerpiece to build a great franchise, and that's Matt Stafford. They've had tons of talent that have come through there. But with Stafford, they've wasted 10 years. And to me, that's not on the coaches. It's not on the players. As we talked earlier about Cleveland, you know, we talked yesterday in yesterday's show about Cleveland and their front office. The Ford family – again, this is a play toy for them. The lines are a plaything for the Ford family. You know, they've got more money than they'll ever spend from their Ford manufacturing, from the Ford car place. You know, this is a play toy for them. You know, yeah, they would like to win, but, you know, it's not about that, and we're just going to make decisions based upon what we think. Well, guess what? The Fords aren't football people, okay? They aren't football people. Unless, you know, old school, Jerry Jones, okay? Jerry Jones comes in, and Jerry Jones likes to think that, oh, I built this team, I did this. No, Jimmy Johnson built those championship Cowboy teams. And the thing about Jimmy Johnson is he had enough of a personality, enough of an ego, enough of a backbone. He could keep Jerry Jones in check. When Jerry Jones got out of control thinking he was responsible for those Super Bowl wins, well, we see is what's happened to the Cowboys. You've got to be like Robert Kraft. Know that you're a football fan. Know that this is a business. And you hire the right people, and you get out of their way, and you let them do their job. And the thing about it is, that is what has happened in Detroit. And again, these are two franchises that, again, are, you know, they're run totally different. You know, Ford family trying to make all the right moves and worrying about, you know, not wanting to do what it takes to win. Robert Kraft, whatever it takes to win, let's do it. And again, you know, I know the Patriots lost last week, but hey, let's be honest. They're the premier franchise in the NFL right now.
They are, Coach. And before I go into the numbers, the one number I will mention is the point spread. Patriots are 6.5, almost a touchdown favorite. The total is around 52. But it's talking about when you're talking about how the Fords and the front office is run. You mentioned they've had Stafford for almost, what, 9 years?
10 years.
Ten years. Okay. Mm-hmm. They also had Megatron, Calvin Johnson, one of the best receivers of his era. They had Ndamukong Suh. I can't name them all off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but they've had some outstanding pro players, some key pieces to where they should have won. Mm-hmm. And frankly, they had a winless season. The front office didn't seem to care. It was mm-hmm. apathy. So I agree with you there. When I take a look at numbers in the game, the Patriots, they lost straight up and against the number, of course, on the road last week. But traditionally, they're very solid on the road. They've covered 14 of their last 18 road games. And remember, they have inflated numbers. Lions and Pats, they haven't played each other since 2014, so you can't find a real true series history. In fact, these two teams have only played 8 times since 1985, with New England winning each of the last 4, going back to 02. I like the Pats to win. If the number goes down to 6, I may lay the 6. If it gets to 7 or higher, I'll pass on the side.
Yeah, the Pats are going to get the 5th straight win versus the Lions. And I don't know when the next time they play will be, but if it's anytime soon, they'll get win number 6 too. But, yes, the Pats, no problem with the Lions. Nothing's going to change with Detroit until either the Ford family sells the team, which I don't think will ever happen, or they finally decide, someone in the Ford family who can control the football team finally says, no, we're going to hire football people. We're going to let them run the business, and we're going to stay out of it. Now, Mike, you'll be back with us Monday on the Monday Morning Blitz, where we recap a lot of games. But let's go ahead and review Monday night's NFL game, which is the Steelers going down to Tampa to take on the Bucs.
Now, hey, Coach, sorry to interrupt. But can I go back and make a point about the Ford family just to be fair?
Certainly. Go ahead. Yes.
All right. Look, if you look at the city of Detroit, they've fallen on hard times, and it didn't really come to me until you mentioned unless they sell the team. I think if they were to sell the team, they would move it from Detroit because the population's gone down. There aren't many affluent areas. So in one sense, they're doing their civil duty by keeping the team in Detroit, because frankly, I don't think the city really warrants having an NFL team at this point.
Well, when you look at what they've, you know, they built Ford Field several years ago, and I don't know if you've seen, you know, the Silver Dome has finally been imploded. Detroit is one of those places that is, quite frankly, very wasteful, and it's not the only city in the United States that is like that. But it's a very wasteful city, and I can see where you're coming from on that. You know, my only counter argument would be is that for the most part, rich people really aren't cared about doing their civic duty. They're just worried about their pocketbook. But again, that's just the way that goes. All right, let's move on again. You're going to be with us Monday Monday Morning Blitz, where we recap the college games and some of the Sunday NFL games. But let's go ahead and preview today on Friday the NFL Monday night game. Again, Steelers going to Tampa to take on the Bucs. And again, not to get off on ownership, but another great example, the Rooney family. They've owned the Steelers and still have controlling interests of the Steelers since day one. They hire good people and they get out of the way. Now, they have 6 Super Bowl trophies for a reason, and albeit the last one was in 2009, but guess what? There are 25 other teams that haven't won one since 2009. But all those titles that the Steelers have, they aren't helping this year.
No, that's the past. And this year, they're winless after 2 weeks. They have a tie and a home loss to Kansas City. And, Coach, I don't know how much of the game you saw, but the Chiefs game, it was tied a couple of times in the second half. But they seem to be in control from start to finish. And, look, I know they were down most of the game. But Pittsburgh ran the ball 13 times for 33 yards. That's abysmal, and it's not Mike Tomlin.
No, it's not Mike Tomlin. And the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes having a great year as a young quarterback there. The Chiefs probably my favorite uniforms in the NFL. But Le'Veon Bell, of course the holdout. Listen, I don't even know if that's the problem for the Steelers right now. I think it's offensive line issues. When you look at the Bucs, Jameis Winston suspended to start the season. Nobody expected much from them until he got back. But listen, the Bucs have been a huge surprise.
Yeah, they're off to a 2-0 start. Jameis Winston, not on the roster. Ryan Fitzpatrick, we've seen him do it before as a backup that comes in. He's putting up big numbers. And look, the Bucs defense only allowing 78 rush yards per game. That's a huge improvement from 2017.
The old man, 35 years old, has a Harvard degree on his wall. He's having fun. Big smile on his face. DeSean Jackson gave him a jacket to wear to the press conference after the game last week. It was hilarious. But nothing hilarious about this. The Bucs are leading the NFC South right now, and the players, DeSean Jackson, all the players are saying, look, man, you got to keep the hot man playing, and that says something about Fitzpatrick's character and how well he's liked and looked up to on that team. Now, listen, these teams, they don't play very often, and this is not the dominant Steelers that we've grown accustomed to. But still, if the Bucs can get a win at home, the Fitzy train, it may roll on for a while.
Yeah, it might. And what it also points to, at least with some of the Buck players, is their lack of respect for Jameis because of what he's done and the position he's put the team in. But it also does certainly point to the respect that Fitzpatrick has garnered from his teammates. When I take a look at numbers in the game, the Steelers have underperformed in Vegas. Vegas likes that because the Steelers are a public team, meaning that the public loves to bet the Steelers. They love to bet the Packers, the Pats, etc. But, Coach, Pittsburgh's only covered one time their last 8 games. The Bucs, they've covered 4 straight games. They get good numbers. The first meeting between these two teams since 2014, it's the first meeting in Tampa since 2010. The Bucs have fared well against the AFC. They have a 4-1-1 spread record when playing teams from the AFC. This line, Coach, it opened Pittsburgh 2.5 or 3. The public's actually bet Tampa Bay. Now, this is looking at it on Friday. Tampa Bay has been bet, so the Steelers only a 1 or a 2-point favorite.
Yeah, and I like the Bucs in this game. I like for them to get the win in this game and upset The Steelers, I think they're playing, as Coach Bryant used to say, I think they're playing with one heartbeat right now. I think this is a team that that's playing together and rallying behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I think they'll do it again on Monday night. Well, Mike, we appreciate you being with us, of course, this week, and look forward to having you back on Monday, the Monday Morning Blitz, where we'll recap this weekend's action. And it looks like not a lot of great games, but there are two or three games, both in the college on the college side and the NFL side, that look to be exciting this weekend.
Yes, I'll be in the dungeon Saturday and Sunday. Come out of the dungeon, and we'll see you on the Blitz Monday morning.
That sounds great. Inside the Numbers, sponsored by State Farm Insurance and all your local State Farm agents. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. We'll take a very quick break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk some Sun Belt Conference football on GameDaySportsRadio.com.